I was talking to Karen Locker the other day from Solutions for E-Commerce. We all know she's a sponsor of my show. She pays me. I don't want to hide that, right? The other thing she reminded me, though, is that if you sign up for her service through my link, you get $50 off, right? You knew that. I forgot that she offers an inventory health assessment. I'm like, Karen, I probably should be talking about that. That valuable service, she's going to take a look through your inventory and help you figure it out. They're going to take care of your suppressed listings. You're tired of having stranded inventory? Is inventory getting lost? When's the last time you looked at your shipments to get them reconciled? How about refunds? Has that happened? Well, Karen takes care of all that for me. She's been doing it for almost 2 years. I pay the same rate you do, but I'm very, very pleased with the service. And two guys, two well-known guys in the area, reach out to me saying, hey, you've been with her. Are you satisfied? I'm perfectly satisfied. And again, I can message her. I get the services I need. So it's Solutions for E-Commerce. The only way you're going to get that deal is using my code Momentum. I have a link on my website. You have to go there. If you're thinking about outsourcing that piece of your business, get your inventory looked at.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Hey, just a quick note. In this episode, we talk about pivot questions. I was able to take Dan's audio explanations of the pivot questions and place them out on the website. So it's in two segments because they're pretty large files, but all nine questions are there, and I think they're worth listening to. He does such a great job explaining them so deep. So it's episode 204 right on the page. Take care. Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 204, Dan Thompson. You know, Dan's one of those guys, the minute you meet him, you think, all right, the dude has it figured out. Now, he's 65 years old, and I ask him that, and he tells me, and I was pretty quick to get to, wow, I hope and pray that I'm as half healthy as Dan is at 65. I mean, he looks good. He's just so with it, and there are reasons that he is, and he talks about that. He's very, very intentional, and I think that's the thing that really attracted me to Dan was just listening to him, how consistent he is, and he doesn't carry that stress with him because of this. I love his technique, and I think you will too. I really hope you take it to heart. Let's get into the podcast. Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, and boy, I'm excited about tonight's guest, Dan Thompson. Welcome, Dan.
Hi, how you doing, Steve?
I am here. Awesome, and you got to know why I'm excited, because Dan's a seller, a mega seller. Dan's a retailer. Dan's a salesman with a big job, has been a long time. Dan is enthusiastic, I think. And Dan, how old are you?
I'm going to be 65 this year.
65, and you are living a life fully lived. Is that fair when I say it that way?
Well, yeah, I guess, but I look at it as there's always much more to do, so I'm kind of future-oriented in that way.
It's funny, we a couple of us guessed your age, and we're all in the low 50s, because A, you don't look like you're 65, not that that's that old, but you clearly don't demonstrate that you're 65, not even close. I mean, intellectually, health-wise, I mean, everything about you doesn't say that. So it's a very good, but that's an intentional life. And I want to get there because you have a routine. So, yeah. So I want to get there, but let's go back. Let's go way back in the way back machine. You're from my end of the world, right? You're from the East Coast.
Yes, I was actually born in Texas, but my parents moved back to Eastern Pennsylvania when I was like two or three or something like that. So I was raised in Pennsylvania, and I only came out here to California in the late 90s.
And when you were in Pennsylvania, so you went to high school in Pennsylvania, did you attend college at all?
Yeah. I went to a college, a local college, Moravian College in Pennsylvania. Yep. And back then it wasn't so expensive to go to college. I didn't really have, I think I had a couple $1,000s in student loans every year for 2 years because I went to community college first.
You know, but that's interesting. At 65, for you to be a college graduate, that's almost an exception. I mean, when you think about it today, it's everybody went to college, right? Back then, very few people were able to go to college. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, most of my friends after high school, they worked, they went to Mack Trucks, or they went to Bethlehem Steel. And those two companies were still fairly strong employers in the, late 60s, early 70s. So, but of course, you know, things change. So you have to be able to adapt.
But why didn't you go that route?
One summer, I think it was the last summer in high school, I got a little summer job in a factory. My job was to test outlets. So these big commercial outlets, they dump a bucket of them on the table, and my job was to get a plug and plug into it. Boom, boom, boom.
Oh, that sounds like fun. Really fun.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I lasted an hour, and I started to fall asleep. I couldn't do it. So
there was a clue.
I'm like, you know what? I better think of something else. I better, you know, start thinking. But I mean, you know, I was always kind of thinking that a trade was not really for me. All my brothers and sisters pretty much went that way. Well, my brothers did, you know. But I tried the college thing, and I just went to community college. You know, we didn't have a lot of money in those days. Certainly not for like a private school or anything like that. So,
what did you think you would do with it? The college experience.
Well, I mean, at first I wanted to be a biologist. I was interested in that. So I studied math and science and biology and so forth. I got to my junior year, I think, and I took economics and organic chemistry in the same semester, which was kind of a mistake. Those are kind of like the two hardest undergraduate courses, at least back then. And so that kind of changed my mind, and I moved more to a liberal arts. And but, you know, my feeling was, and it still is today, is that at least for now, a college degree, it doesn't matter where you get it, unless you're good enough to be in like an Ivy League school or you have some real focus, like a particular type of engineering or so forth. Just get a degree and you can open up a lot of doors.
You know, and I usually suggest to people who don't have a plan, get an accounting degree. It's better than a business degree because accounting is the same across all industries. It's one thing that transcends from any industry. Sales would be similar too, but business degrees, they're too generic, you know, and business changes continually. Accounting doesn't. The foundations are the same. They've been the same for a long, long, long time. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's true. I don't think it's true anymore that, you know, you can pick an area in college and think that that's what you're going to do. Five years down, it's probably going to be different anyway.
So, right.
You know, really, you know, find something that is interesting, has some application in business if that's where you want to go. And, try to get it done. But, you know, I think that there's a lot to be said for looking outside of college too nowadays.
Yeah.
And I think more and more, college is not going to be the only avenue to a good job.
I'm hopeful.
There is going to be any jobs, you know, so.
I'm hopeful, though, that it isn't because, you know, I mean, think of all the additional classes you took outside of what you were there to learn, right? Mine was accounting, right? I took a zillion other classes. And I hate to say it, I call them profit fillers now because, you know, you go into a classroom and there'd be 120 or 130 people. It's almost impossible to get any time with anyone, right? One-on-one time.
Yeah.
So it's really generic.
Right.
You might as well just give me a video. You know, it's really the same thing and save the money. However, it's a profit filler because they get 130 kids paying, you know, it's a couple $1,000s a class now, right? And so those things are huge profit makers. And I'm not faulting the school. I just don't think they can undo it. They built these large institutions that take a lot of money to pay for, and I just don't think they can stop. I don't think they can turn it off.
Yeah, that's true. The other side of that, though, is there are some courses that seem at first to be, extraneous, but can actually really help. Like I remember when I was in high school, if you wanted to go to college, I went to a Catholic high school, but if you wanted to go to college, they suggested you take Latin.
Mm.
Latin.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody even talks about Latin anymore, but. But then I had 4 years of Latin.
Wow.
At first I thought, well, what the heck is this going to do for me? I mean, it's not really, nobody speaks it. Nobody even reads it hardly, you know. But here's what happened. It really helped me to understand English. Mm-hmm. Because in order to understand Latin, you have to really understand words and so forth. And understanding English for what I did for the rest of my life was really important. Because being able being able to talk, being able to understand things really comes in handy if you're in management or business or something like
that. Well, so, let's talk, you're in sales. Let's say where you really work. I think you're absolutely correct. You have a gift of communicating, right? And is that where you see that applied in your life, that Latin or the ability to understand language?
Yep. There's a couple, there's different types of sales in the sales world. So, you know, basically it boils down into two kind of areas. One is what they call farming, and one is what they call hunting. So farming is more relationship building. It's what people do if you sell the grocery stores or the big box markets, or you sell items to doctors or so forth. This is where you're developing relationships. You're going around. You have something kind of similar every day. You have a pattern. Now the other side of sales, the side that I'm in, is what they call hunting sales. And at the enterprise level, what that basically is when you start a job, your boss comes in and says, okay, here's your goal, $1 million, $2 million, $5 million, whatever it is, in new sales, go out and get it. And, like, for instance, I talk with my boss maybe once a week for 15 minutes. We go, and we don't talk about what I'm going to do day to day. What we talk about is, how far are you in your goal? What are the deals you have, and so forth?
Right, your pipeline, right? How full is your pipeline, right?
Right, and this is very similar to what you have to do in an Amazon. Say you want to do
$1 million in sales.
Yeah, $1 million in sales. Say you want to do wholesale. Okay, so what the key to wholesale is getting accounts. Mm-hmm. The key to getting accounts via wholesale is mostly requires sales skills. You have to be able to get in contact with somebody. You have to be able to put out your pitch yourself or your company as a way that will help them. And that's how you can get accounts in wholesale.
When you were talking about what type of salesman you are, which type of salesman does it take to be able to get those wholesale accounts in this scenario?
Well, it takes a hunter.
A hunter, not a farmer.
Not a farmer, because eventually, both of them kind of meld together after a certain point. Because once you have an account, you want to have the ability to build a relationship and so forth and so on.
But, and that's the farming technique you're talking about.
Right.
Okay.
Right. That's a farming thing. But to get the accounts, you have to go out there and cold call. What we used to call cold call. Now, nobody actually goes on in the sales world, at least in enterprise. I've sold to Google, to Apple, to Sony Electronics, to big companies. You don't just call these people up. Especially in the C-suite, you can't even hardly talk to them. You have to do it via email. You have to do it. You have five or six different avenues of ways of kind of introducing yourself or getting your point. And the main thing is to get across at the right time something that they are interested, something that's going to help them and their business. Well, and that's selling.
Okay, so let's take that to the wholesale approach. Give me a couple techniques. So how does somebody, this is Steve. Steve wants to sell $1 million. He wants to sell wholesale. So use the hunter approach to help me understand how to approach wholesalers.
Okay, so if you're going to get in touch with a wholesaler or go to a show and introduce yourself, of course, you don't want to come in and say, can I sell on Amazon? You don't want to do that. But you don't even want to talk about selling their products. So you want to take the way that I do it oftentimes is to take an approach of something that that isn't being done for them. So let's say there's a manufacturer that has four or five products on Amazon. You see that they're good, but all the manufacturers I deal with about 30 right now. I don't think more than 20% of their products are actually on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Most of them are not on Amazon, right? And everybody that goes to sell to these manufacturers wants to sell the top five. I do too. But if you start with the idea of, I'm going to take these three new products that aren't on Amazon, and I'm going to approach that manufacturer and say, look, I can introduce products for you onto other platforms and so on. Make a pitch like that. That's how you kind of pivot a little bit away from the crowd.
So you're helping them, right, by helping them, because they need to sell every product they have, right, not just the ones that are on Amazon. They want the others somewhere selling too. And so you're saying, I'll do the legwork?
Yes, right, right. And, you know, now what's going to happen? They may not sell. So you invest, you buy, you know, 10 or 20 of the, you know, whatever it is, buy a small amount, do a quick listing, put it up there, get it going, show them something, maybe run a little PPC or whatever. But, you know, once you've established in their minds that you're there to help build their business, not just take advantage for yourself, it's going to open up. A lot of things are going to open up.
Now, and do you take
that's
that?
How I would approach it.
All right. That makes perfect sense. So that's when you do you do that when you go and see a trade show? I mean, how did you find your 30 wholesales? Was it a combination or is it just your solid hunting technique? Boom.
It's mostly me contacting them and talking to them on the phone. I didn't really do it through the trade shows until a little bit later.
Okay. So yeah. You're using your old school technique, what you've been taught, cold calling. Hey, this is Dan and I'm interested in, you know, can I speak to, you know, your sales department, whatever it is. And then you try to establish what in your experience, because I remember when I sold life insurance, we used to send out 1,000 letters, make 100 calls, get one appointment, yeah. Right? No, wait, yep. It was 1,000 letters. 1,000 letters, make the 1,000 calls, get 100 conversations, 10 appointments, make one sale, or some formula that they used to use, right?
Yeah, right.
What's your experience when you're doing this? So when you're cold calling, when you're hunting wholesale accounts, what's your experience?
Well, you know, Steve, it used to be that way 10 or 15 years ago that you did mass dialings and sent a whole bunch of letters and so forth. But nowadays, it's really kind of turned the corner. There's a different way of doing it. Instead of spending a lot of time contacting hundreds of people, what you do now is focus on just a few people and understand. You got to do a lot of research now in sales, especially at the enterprise level. You understand their business. You understand what their pain points are, whether it's a CFO or a CMO or a CEO or just a director. You understand their business. You understand what their concerns are, and you apply your product to those concerns. And you only contact them if your product can help with their concerns. And it's the same way with contacting manufacturers on Amazon. Understand their business. Find out what the pain points are that you can help with your skill set of going on Amazon, going on, you know, eBay or Walmart or, you know, whatever, you know, things you have, understanding PPC. But don't just say that you do that. Show them how what you do is going to help them. That's how. So it's not a scattershot approach. It's a very direct, pointed approach that helps you to get some things.
Very cool. So this week, after we were together, we went to Las Vegas to the licensing show. Andy, Leron, and myself went, and it was amazing to see. But what was so cool? There was a gentleman there who's going to come on my show at some point, and he has a product. So one single product, but multiple variations of the product. Amazing product. And last year he got his first licensing deal. And then this year he came back. He hired a company, spent a lot of money, hired a company smartly who helps get more licensing deals, put together this unbelievable presentation in a PDF form, and then he brought it with him that when he was making appointments to go see Nickelodeon or Hasbro, major, major accounts, he was so professional in that, and he demonstrated, which is what you're saying, here's what I was able to do when I got this licensing deal. And he had quotes from the people who gave him the licensing deal and what it did for their business and how great he was to work with. So when you go into a Nickelodeon or a Hasbro with that kind of pitch, they can see exactly what you're talking about. Here's what I can do, and here's what I demonstrated I can do, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, human nature is, what will it do for me?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, from our side, we want to, you know, we want to get the good products. They're going to make us money, and it doesn't take a lot of work. You just stick them up there and make money, and that's fine if you can find those. And you still can. You can find that kind of a thing. But you know, if you're having trouble finding that kind of thing, then you gotta turn it a little bit and find out what's important for that particular manufacturer.
Now, your 30 accounts. Okay. Did you? Are they all, they're all in kind of a related industry?
Yeah. So,
okay.
Well,
here's where I was going to go, because I was thinking that you've gotten one or two, those pain points that you saw that you helped fix. Did you then assume that they were the same pain points for the next manufacturer and the next manufacturer? I mean, is that common sense, like to think that way?
Yep, that's how you do it. I mean, that's how we do it in sales. If I'm calling on, if I'm selling a software product to Google, I can be pretty sure that Facebook and Oracle and all the other companies with the same job title are going to have those kind of same concerns or see the same type of opportunity. And so you want to kind of build, it's building on your strength. That's really what that is. It's, you know, being able, you know, once you have a manufacturer, being able to look at, you know, what was it that made them want to go with me, and then just apply that.
Oh, that's big.
To Jason. Yeah.
That's big right there. Wait, I'm going to pull back on that because that's a pro tip. What was it? I mean, do you even ask? Could you, or is this too bold to even ask a wholesaler, hey, Dan, you know, I appreciate you, the business, and man, I'm really excited. What was the one thing that helped trigger you to say yes?
No. I mean, this is what we do all the time in enterprise sales, is we go back, and if we can't figure it out, people appreciate it when you come back to them and ask them. They understand that you're trying to be the best for them, the best, if it's a best salesperson, fine. If it's the best seller on Amazon, fine. That, you know, they're seeing that because you're taking the time to analyze what's happening, that, you know, that's going to make you a better a partner for them.
Well, I see it two ways. One, it reinforces what that customer or that whole manufacturer wanted from me, right? Because that's what they heard, and that's why they went with me. Now I'm reinforcing that behavior, and now I'll remember that. Maybe, boy, I got to really pay attention to that. But then, as you say, going forward, that's my pitch to the next guy. Hey, I'm assuming you're having trouble with X. Here's what I can do for you. Here's why vendors are choosing, or manufacturers are choosing me, because I've been able to help them with Y, right? Love it.
Right, right. Yeah, and you know, the other thing you can do is to try to turn around what the existing parameters are. So, you know, you might come across a manufacturer that just wants to have one person selling, and you know, if you can get that, that's good. But if you're coming up against that, the way that I approach that is I try to think, now what's the disadvantage of just having one seller?
Right, lots.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe that person is going to be lazy. They're not going to do PPC. They're not going to go on different platforms or so forth. And so, you know, think of a couple things. Look at the listing. See what's going on. You can approach that guy and be the second one.
Right. Their account could get suspended and shut the whole business down, right? That whole line outside of their control.
Thing.
Right. I mean, there are lots of things.
You know, yeah. The point is you have to be able to look at what you're facing. And try to see, don't just turn away if it's something hard, but try to look through it, try to look around it, try to see what avenue you can take to really help the person even more, you know, but also help yourself, of course. You know,
love it. Yeah. All right, let's do this. I want to take a break because I want to come back and talk about pivoting. You seem to be a pivot man, and you kind of have a little bit of a system down. I also, and I don't want to miss this, is I want to talk about your daily routine, because my guess is that's made you the person that you are. Is that a fair statement?
I would say probably.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. You've heard me talk a lot about private label, and Andy Slammons is back with a new free course. It's the Smart Private Label course. S stands for selecting a product. M, manufacture with the right supplier. So important. Amazing photos, keyword research, and listing preparation is the A. R stands for ranking your product to the first page of search. We all know how critical that is. And then T is taking your product to the top of Amazon and beyond. This is a free course. It's going to help you get that foundation to do your own private label productness. You want to work smarter. Get it smarter. AmazingFreedom.com/smart. AmazingFreedom.com/smart. Tell Andy I sent you. So how many of us are willing to give up that first 2 hours of every single day to be intentional about your life? Well, you listen to Dan. Dan's a seven-figure mega seller on wholesale, but he's got a huge job, a lot of responsibility, and he's able to do that. And, you know, it's because he's so focused. He is so focused. And I just think that that's such a great lesson. So if you're struggling, if you're jumping around and things aren't really quite going as well as they should be, or you expect they should be, maybe this is the answer. Maybe you ought to take a risk and pull back and be intentional about your life. Lord knows I need it, and I am going to do it. Let's get back into the podcast. We're back, and we're talking with Dan Thompson, who's schooling us on old school sales. But, you know, it's funny you listening to you say that. I remember those kind of discussions when I was in sales, and they're still as true today as they were then. It really is, isn't it?
Yeah, it is true. I mean, the techniques for getting in front of people evolve because the world evolves. There, you know, when I started selling, there was no cell phones, there was no email, there was no really computers. You know, you're on the phone in an office somewhere, or you're walking up to somebody in their place of business. So that's a lot different.
That's a lot different. So that has changed. But the fundamentals of the conversation, offering value, bringing something for them, that hasn't changed.
That has not changed.
So when I walk up and say, hey, my name is Steve, and you should let me sell on Amazon, that doesn't go very far, period. I want to sell on Amazon. I'm going to fix your problems. I'm going to do this. That's what usually the pitch is. You're doing it all wrong, blah, 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 blah. You're the 80th guy that came in and told me the same thing, Steve. I don't believe you. That's what you hear. And that's not a good way. So if you know that's not going to work, you do have to come up with new techniques. Okay. So before we jump into the pivot, let's talk about your day. I love. First off, you're one of those crazy, kooky California guys, right? Yeah. And you've been there for how long?
I wasn't always.
I know. How long you been there? Yeah, but they sucked you in. You're now drinking the Kool-Aid.
I came here in 1999.
Okay. So you're now drinking the Kool-Aid, man. You're in. You're knee-deep.
I'm knee-deep. Definitely.
You buy into it, though. Lifestyle-wise, do you think you could have that lifestyle in Pennsylvania?
Well, you know, I mean, I think, you know, nowadays things get out across the country a lot faster than they used to. I mean, you know, when I was in high school and college back in like the hippie days, you know, Pennsylvania was like 2 years behind the coast, because there was no social media, there was nothing personal where you can actually see what's going on in real time, like there is now. You know, so yeah, you know, I think that's changed, but you know, it's I've always kind of been laid back. My philosophy has always been. It's good to work hard, but it's better to work smart. Mm. And I've seen time and time again that if you work smart, you can still work hard if you want to. If you want to work 80 hours a week or 60 hours, go ahead, go for it, man. But if I can do in 20 hours what you can do in 40 hours, I don't know. You take your choice how you want to do it.
That's for sure.
To me, if I can do in 20 hours and sell $1 million on Amazon plus have a job and not really have to spend a whole bunch of time doing it, then that's appeals to me a little bit more.
Well, and you're living proof that it can be done. So let's walk through your day. You get up in the morning. What's the first thing? I don't want to hear about bathroom or anything like that, but after that, where are you going?
Okay. So my day does not start with looking at what I did on Amazon last night or what my numbers are. I get up at about 6:30. I have a little home office in the house away from, you know, all the hustle and bustle. And I sit down and I meditate for 10 minutes. Nothing religious. I use Headspace, which is an app you can get. And costs a couple bucks a month. And it's kind of guided just to calm down.
Headphones or without headphones?
No, with headphones.
With headphones. You're 10 minutes in Headspace.
10 minutes in Headspace. Then I do about 20 minutes of yoga. Because now I do it because of the breathing. It's also a kind of an exercise, but it's more for getting deep breathing. And there's different poses that help you kind of stretch out. But what it does is it focuses me in and relaxes me.
Now, is this instructional yoga where you're seen on TV?
It's just YouTube videos. Okay. There's a million of them out there.
Right.
You know?
Right. So far you haven't spent any money. You spend a little bit of money on Headspace. Yeah. I think there's a little fee. Right. And now you got free YouTube videos. 30 minutes in, you're really spending virtually nothing, but you're cleansing your mind in essence.
Cleansing my mind. And for me, because I have allergies and asthma and so forth, it's good for breathing. It's good for my lungs. Then I spend about 20 minutes playing my guitar.
When you told me this, I was thinking, I'm like, yeah. is this dude a Led Zeppelin or a no, Peter, no. Paul, and Mary? Which is he?
Remember, I'm from the late 60s, and that was my time. So I'm Bob Dylan and Crosby, Stills, and Nash and these kind of guys. So I play acoustic guitar, fingerstyle. And I do that because what's really fun for me at the beginning of the – what's really kind of important, that's part of what gets me – you know, kind of gets all the heaviness off of everything and gets me in a good place.
Okay, so if I didn't play guitar, what would be something you would suggest that would be similar?
Maybe you would do formal exercise. Maybe you would take a walk. Maybe you would, do something that's interesting to you. Read a novel, part of a novel, just for 10 or 15 minutes. Read something. If you don't like reading, whatever your sport is, learn a little bit about it, or do some. If you're a golfer, do some golfing exercises, or swing a club a little bit, or anything that's for you. I think if we start our day that way, then we don't go through the day thinking that we're missing something or we're not paying attention.
That's another deep one, Dan, right there. So, ooh, all right. No, it's good. I mean, it really is, because I'm thinking about it. I'm sitting here thinking about the day, right? So again, you know, 10 minutes, got the headspace on, I am meditating. I've got 20 minutes of yoga. I'm breathing correctly. I'm just getting, and I'm limber. Everything's going great. The next, how many minutes is this next one? 20 minutes?
Just 15, 20 minutes.
15, 20 minutes doing something that inspires you, that you love, that's important, so you don't feel like, and what you said at the end was very powerful, so you don't feel like you're missing something.
Right.
By this point of the day, you could technically go back to bed and feel pretty good, like, I got something done today. I mean, seriously. I mean, that's more than most people do all day.
Well, actually, this is building up to what I think is the most important time I spend during the day. So, okay, so at this point, it's about an hour. It's only 7:30, okay? So that's all it is. It's 1 hour. And then usually what I do is I will at that point look at my emails, kind of look at Amazon, and spend about 15, 20 minutes just going. I have 10 or 15 little tabs that I open up just to check, tax jar and all these things. I just check, make sure there isn't any big fire that I have to put out. But almost always there isn't. But, I do check that. Then after that, then I take an hour. And I usually go get coffee. I'll listen to a podcast. Could be your podcast. I like to listen to yours. I like to listen to a couple other ones about Amazon. But it could also be a podcast on just some topic that'll help me to think. And the purpose of that is to really kind of open up my mind a little bit. Because after I do that, after I spend about 20, 30 minutes or 40 minutes, whatever, on that, then I take a 20 minutes to a half hour and do the most important thing that I think you can do for your business. And that is, I just think about my business. How can I make it better? If I have a particular project, how can I, how can I pivot a little bit? What questions can I ask? If I'm facing a problem, I take a set amount of time to look at that. It's like to be strategic about my business. It's built in every day. Not on Saturday and Sunday, that's family, but Monday through Friday.
And so all this is because you're getting up earlier than you need to go to your real job. I mean, let's put all the excuses aside. Dan, you have a full-time job, a big full-time job, right? I mean, I know you work from home and or whatever, but it's still, you have a lot of responsibility. Let me say it that way.
Yep.
Yeah. So there's no excuse there. You're not, I get it when they have little kids, that's a different story. That's a legitimate excuse. But outside of that, generally speaking, nobody's going to say that they're working harder than you are, right? Because you're putting in a lot of hours and you have a lot of responsibility. Love it. Okay. So you're now thinking about your business. You've already know you could be thinking of ways to solve the problems that you have, right?
Thinking about a particular product. I'm getting into private label now. So I'm not doing private label. I'm not doing the research. I'm thinking about, how am I going to approach this? How am I going to, what kind of private label business do I want to have? These are the kind of questions I have in this time period. It's really to be strategic. It's to kind of step above everything. Now, you can't really do that until you first understand how your problem, what the problem is, or what the work is that you want to do. So in private label, you can't really start to do that till you understand all the little steps that go into it. You know, how to source and, you know, how to do PVC and, you know, all the how-tos. Once you learn that, then you can step back and look at, okay, now how am I going to position myself? How am I going to pivot or turn so that I create space for myself, or, you know, I can do something that takes advantage of you know, what I have to bring to it already, whether that be a specific skill set, or maybe it's money, maybe it's some contacts I have, or whatever.
I think Gary Vee would call it clouds and dirt, the two examples, right?
Yeah,
get up above it, clouds, and down into it is in the dirt. And you're going back and forth somewhat in this discussion, right? You're in up and down, depending on how it's needed. Is that fair?
Yeah, depending on how it's needed. But the point is that I'm taking specific time to think about the cloud part.
Right.
I'm not just letting that happen every once in a while. I want to take a specific time every day to devote to that. And, you know, some days I don't think of anything. It feels like you're wasting 20 minutes just sitting there. But, you know, I mean, that's where creativity can bubble up.
And do you think most people are missing this point? I mean, do you think because they're getting, you know, if you get up, first thing you do is check your Amazon account, your emails, you're looking at the crisis. Did I get suspended? Did this happen? Did the world come to an end? You're never going to get your mind to that special place, right?
Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah. You know, it can happen on an offhand way. But, you know, people talk about thinking out of the box. And sometimes it seems like that just happens to people, or some people are good at that. And it's not really the case. The real case is that you can learn how to think out of the box. You can learn how to be creative and innovative in your business or in your job. If you just and this is one of the things you have to do, though. You have to take time to allow ideas to come, and you have to ask questions. Questions is the key.
Allow things to come. Ooh,
yeah,
dude, you're deep. You've got some deep depth going on there. Okay. So we've gotten to that point. Now, at some point, you're going to have to go to work, right? What happens now when I'm looking at my creative side and I see some things that the direction I'm going is not where I want to go, or the roadblocks just keep coming faster and faster and faster? What's your advice there? Where do you go for that?
Well, if I start to feel overwhelmed with things, you know, that's a sign to me that I've probably bitten off more than I can chew. Mm. That I don't take on a task unless I feel that I can really. Let me say this a different way. One of the areas that I've been working on this year, because in the past I've taken on five things at once. You know, and what I found is that doesn't work. What happens is that you get to a point very easily when you're doing that where you have too many things coming in and it's starting to be overwhelming. And so the key is to be able to say no to things and to just focus on one thing. So for instance, you know, last year when I first started in Amazon, I took every course. I took a course on wholesale. I took a course on private label. I was buying lists. I was going out to store. I was trying to do everything. Mm-hmm. And in one sense, that can be okay if you have the money to do that and the time, and you don't really need to have a business right at that point. You just want to kind of see what it all is and learn a little bit. That's okay. But the problem with that is that you just get overwhelmed too easily, and you can't really focus in on something.
And so nothing gets done well.
Right.
Lots of stuff gets done, but nothing gets done well. I can relate. I've been there.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some techniques, because you have some ways of approaching things. And I thought it was pretty sound the way you did it. Again, no surprise, very methodical, very methodical. And I assume that's a lifetime experience kind of list. Is that fair?
Well, it's kind of how I've always approached things. I'm kind of a logical type of person. And process is important to a degree. But, you know, these are things that I've learned. Well, a lot of what we're talking about here, you know, comes from the sales world. Mm. Comes from, you know, people think that salespeople are just slap on the back type of guy or somebody that's off the cuff all the time. It's not really true. The best salespeople prepare very much.
Very methodical.
very methodical. And, you know, a lot of really good hunting salespeople are introverts. They're not slap on the back type of people.
You know, I've seen that in my lifetime, that they're very quiet and modest, but yet when it needs to get done, they can step up. Is that taught, or is that, are you born with that?
Well, you know, I think it's something where you can learn how to do it. Some people it comes naturally, mm-hmm. you know. So I would say for me, you know, being able to be in front of a group of people and talk to them, that came, I knew that back in seventh grade when we had to do talks in front of the class, and I got up and everybody started clapping because they liked what I used to say. And I just talked off the cuff. That was easy for me for some reason, you know, but it is something you can learn how to do. And I mean, that's why you have things like Toastmasters and so forth. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, you mm-hmm. can learn, and, you know, any kind of skill like that, you can learn if you want to just take the time to do it. Now, it might not be your forte, but you can learn it to some degree. I guess.
Yeah, even if you're not comfortable with it, because as you would say, you're not comfortable with it all the time, but it's right. just you've mastered it. Or you've gotten yes. it to a place where you can accept it and you know this is what you need to do. Well, let's talk techniques, because you have a technique mm-hmm. of approaching things. Let's start at the beginning and rock our way right through it.
All right. So the first thing I do, if I want to, you know, say be a wholesaler or mm-hmm. be a private label person, or I don't know that much about the in-store thing, but, you know, if I want to bring a product to market, what's the first thing I do? What I do is I first... learn what the boundaries are that hold in the majority.
Hmm.
So what you want to do is, this is where you have to study a bit. So you need, if you want to get into wholesaling, my advice to you is to take a couple courses, not just one. If you can do that, go on eBay, go on YouTube, find a video, find out about how people are doing it. Find out what the boundaries are, the parameters people are setting up, like in wholesale, it might be, you know, or private label, say, for instance, it might be, you know, find a product that you can ship in by air, that you can sell 10 a day, and, you know, that is a niche or something like that. So those are kind of the parameters that the teachers teach, mm-hmm. right? So what I do is I want to understand what all those parameters are. Then I want to say to myself, okay, this is what everybody is doing. How can I turn that just a little bit? And this is what I find with the people that are most successful on a particular platform, is they don't necessarily do what the teachers teach. They might do it at first so they can learn it, but then they pivot just a little bit. And the way you do that is by asking a set of questions. And I didn't come up with the questions. This has been around, I remember reading about it 20, 30 years ago, but it's questions about what you're going to do. So I call them like pivot questions. So it's like, what can I substitute about this? Now, if you're thinking about a product, you can think of it, you can use these questions for that. If you're thinking about how can I be a wholesaler or how can I private label, and you're looking at what the boundaries are, you can ask these questions. How can I combine things together to make something different, whether it's an approach to selling? How can I adapt? How can I magnify something, make it bigger, make it smaller? How can I modify it? So for instance, you know, when I was talking about approaching a manufacturer, if I say, and this is one of them, what can I eliminate? Well, that's how I thought about, wait a minute, I don't have to go to this person and say, I'm gonna sell the ABC product that everybody's selling. I want to sell the XYZ product nobody's selling. I'm eliminating everything else, and I'm going to just sell this.
So there's no reason for them not to sell to you because they're not selling to anyone.
Right.
There's yes. no reason. There's yeah. not too many people on the – none of that stuff exists because nobody's doing it. So
right.
you're saying, hey, let me help you expand your business by bringing these products to market through me, period.
Right. And I got to that idea by asking these types of questions. What can I substitute? What can I combine? How can I adapt? How can I magnify something? Hmm. How can I what can I eliminate from this process, you know, that'll make it more unique for me or make it a better process? What can I rearrange? These are the type of questions.
And you don't get those questions without asking questions. Is correct? I mean, you got to go up and talk. Right. Again, you don't walk up to that wholesale account and say, my name's Steve. I sell on Amazon. Let me sell your product. I can do it better than anyone else. Blah, 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 blah. It's really like you start talking to them and they start talking about their business, right? That's probably a good way to get going.
And, you know, the other thing is, remember, let's go back to the 20, 30 minutes I take to think. These are the kind of questions I ask about how to approach a wholesaler, or what kind of product should I private label? I ask these kind of, or I have a product. How can I differentiate it? Mm-hmm. How can I, you know, what can I do to make it something unique to my brand? You know, I ask these questions. What can I substitute? What can I combine, and so forth?
Beautiful. Okay. Next spot.
So then what I want to do is look at who is the competition not serving. So, you know, in terms of like sourcing, what are people afraid of selling?
Give me an example. Yeah.
Well, okay. So the example I like to give is hazmat products. So, you know, people don't like to get into hazmat because you have to do it yourself and so forth. But just a few months ago, Amazon came out with where you can be a Prime seller but fulfill it yourself, right? Mm-hmm. I forget what they call it.
Seller fulfilled Prime.
Okay, so that, you know, as soon as I heard that, I thought, wait a minute, because I had bought some hand cleanser and some like fragrance oil that they said was hazmat. I don't know why, but they said it was, and I had a couple cases. And I was just going to put it on eBay or something. But when this came out, I all of a sudden hooked the two together. I thought, wait a minute, I can sell hazmat. I don't have to be accepted into the hazmat FBA program. I can still be Prime and sell hazmat now, right?
And that's is your mind, I guess this is common sense what you're going to say, Dusty, because you have that clarity session every day where you're spending 30 minutes thinking of things, when these opportunities come along, you're attuned to them, correct? Is that kind of fair?
Yeah, because what you're doing is you're practicing. See, look, what is creativity? Creativity is just making connections between disparate things. Mm. It's being able to take something over here and something over here and put them together. That's really the heart of creativity. And if you practice doing that by asking these type of questions and doing it a little bit every day, 5-10 minutes, I do it a half hour for 10 minutes. You start to practice, your mind starts to think in those kinds of ways. Now, you know, some people do it a lot easier than others. You know, it's like any kind of skill, it has to be learned, but everybody can do it to some degree.
It's like sharpening a pencil. If you keep sharpening, it does get sharper over time.
Right.
Practice. I got a quotable there, Dan. Creativity is making connections of disparate things. That's pretty deep there, buddy. You really are seeing things that aren't connected. Oh, okay. All right, keep it going because I'm enjoying it.
This is how people in Silicon Valley think. And this is where I'm selling now, and mm-hmm. I have been since 99. So they're thinking in this way. They're all about disruption. And disruption is basically turning something on its head, pivoting. It's turning it around, trying to do something different than it's done before, and hopefully successfully. Now, the other side of that, of course, is it's a little more risky. So you have to be careful when you're doing things like this, when you're kind of taking a little bit different path. The more different the path, the more risk there is, okay? So you need to be able to, well, I call it stacking the risk mitigators. So you need to be able to, make sure that if it fails, and things are going to fail, I've had a lot of failures, things are going to fail, but you need to have some level of security underneath that. So if it fails, you know, there's a stop before you hit complete bottom.
So it's not a fatal, you don't make fatal.
It's not a fatal hit.
Right. Yeah. You take risks, calculated risks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's really what it comes down to.
Love it.
So, you know, look across products and industries. If for instance, you are looking at private label product, look at other products that do the same thing. Don't just look at that one product and see if you can fit into that. Maybe you can't fit into that in terms of, there being enough market there.
You have an example?
Yeah, like for instance, I like to look at when I was when I was trying to expand out one of my wholesale lines, I wanted to put some of the newer products up, but there's like 10 other people on the listing for this brand. Okay. We all sell the same thing, right? So I wanted to be able to put some listings up, but I didn't want them to get taken over immediately. Not taken over, but everybody jump on.
Mm-hmm.
So what I tried to do was think about, okay, how can I look across, what are alternate products? What are something that has the same function or that can be substituted in or added into this? And what I came up with was another product that I could brand that was a complement to this particular product that was new for this company.
So you created a bundle in essence, but it was a beneficial bundle.
Right, right. It was something that adjacent to that particular product that the people could use, and it was very inexpensive. But what it did was it gave me a little more ownership of that listing, where people couldn't just jump on it right away.
And let me say this too, since I know the product, you solved a problem that would have come up before they even realized it was a problem. I can tell by looking, I'll be like, yeah. Oh, that's a really good idea, because you know you're going to need something. And you didn't even know you needed it until you saw that, and you'd be like, oh, boy, that just makes it easy. And to me, right. That's a very, as I told you, I have a similar, not an issue, I've had a similar challenge, and I've paused. I haven't given up on it. I just paused because I knew it wasn't great, and I wanted to fix it before we move forward. And your technique is going to help me move forward with something that has been something that's challenged me, and I just had not figured out a better way. But again, that's the power of networking. Right.
Yeah.
Meeting a guy like you and getting a conversation and talking through other things and developing a relationship has allowed me and afforded me this opportunity. So I'm very thankful and grateful to you. But I think that's very smart of you. So that was rather than just go and like you say, create another channel that you're going to end up just getting frustrated with. You fixed this because, quite frankly, the only way they're making this product the only way they can get on that listing is by having your individual product on there, which they can't. So,
right. Boom. Yeah. I mean, you know, eventually it'll just like everything, you know, it'll start to get saturated. But, you know, the way you do this with is say you're doing a private label product. The way you do this is just the way that I start is by I think, OK, what happens before and what happens after? That's one line of thinking. The other line of thinking is, okay, who's using this product? Who else might use it? Who isn't using it now but might want to use it if it's in a little bit different context? So let me give you an example that, you know, everybody talks about the example in private label, barbecue gloves. So, you know, you look at barbecue gloves and you say, okay, what happens before, what happens after? That could be cleaning the grill, that could be brushing on the meat or whatever it is. You know, there's different things you can add in there. Okay, that's one way of looking at something. And you just take some time to think. You might not do, and I'm of course not suggesting people go out and do barbecue gloves. I'm just giving an example. But the other thing to look at is you look across what they call strategic groups. So who is buying this and why are they buying it? Are they buying it for price? Are they buying it for function? Are they more high end? Are they more low end? What if the product, if barbecue gloves might be just for function? So how about if I add in something emotional, maybe a funny saying? Barbecue gloves are for men mostly. If you see all the pictures, they're big, one size fits all, but it's a man's size. But, you know, if you look at who barbecues, it's not just men. You know, there's millions of households across the country that are just run by women. And if they barbecue, maybe they might want a smaller glove or a pink glove or I don't know what. But, you know, that's what you start doing. And that kind of thinking is how you can differentiate.
I love it. And not give up, but just stand out.
Just stand out. And again, you know, you have to look at your risk tolerance. If you're going to do a barbecue glove just for women, you have to know that it might not work. It might just be that there are no women that want to buy them. Okay, so you buy a small lot. somehow, or, you know, even buy them at full price just to test the idea, and, you know, so you don't lose so much, but you see if it's going to work, you know.
That's a pro tip right there.
Yeah.
That's a very big pro tip. So you saying, hey, buy them from somewhere else for full price and put them up for sale. You're not paying to have them created. You're not paying the sample fees. You're not paying any of that junk. And yet you're able to figure it out. You know you're going to lose money, but it's degrees. It's a calculated loss of money, right?
Right.
So that's a very smart tip right there, because you can easily buy 10 or 20 and you can see what happens to them. Very, very smart. Okay, keep going. Jeez, Dan, you're a wisdom source tonight.
Well, that's pretty much the steps that I take. So it's basically...
Run them down one more time, yeah, fast.
So it's basically understand what the boundaries are. What is the teacher's teaching? What are their parameters that they're saying you should do? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next step is you pivot by asking questions. How can I substitute, combine, adapt, magnify, modify, and so forth, eliminate? Then you look at who the competition is not serving, or who the product is not serving but could serve. You just ask questions, and again, use those seven questions to look at that. Then you look across alternatives, alternative products. So what kind of product, like for instance, you look at barbecue gloves and it's saturated. Too many people are selling it. But wait, what else do people do with cooking? You know, is there other products? And what I found was a thing called cut-resistant gloves. They just have a little wire mesh in the glove. And that actually has a lot less reviews and a lot more sales than barbecue gloves. You can get into that much more easily, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you look across different, but what are, it's a different form, but it's the same function. You ask that kind of question. And then you ask two other things. The groups who are buying it, are they buying for high or low? Are they buying for emotion or for function? And what can I take away? What can I add into that? And that's basically, that's the process that I use. And you can do that for a product, or you can do that for a method of selling, whether it's, you know, doing a wholesale or, you know, making bundles or, you know, whatever you want to do.
You know, you have generously offered to give me that list, and I'm going to make it available on my website. So when you go to this episode, click out there, and I'm going to pop this whole list that Dan has. He has this in a format, a very nice format, and I'm going to share that with people. So that's still cool, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
perfect. No, and I'll put it up there, and I'll post it right in my in this episode. Dan, I'm very, very excited because, you know, you've been selling for a long time. You have a retail store. You have a very large wholesale business. And you're just getting started. And you're 65 years old. And you're just getting started. Isn't it exciting? I mean, that was the vibe I got from you. You see nothing but opportunity, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I think what's really exciting about this time is that things are changing so much. It could be a little scary to people. But on the flip side of it is when things change, it creates opportunity. And if you look at it that way, then it's very exciting. So that's how I choose to look at it. I mean, you don't have to, but.
Well, and that's probably why you're so darn healthy, because of all those steps, those intentional steps. This is, I'm so hot on this intentional living because it's so, so, so important. And I just think that there's a reason you're having incredible success, because you've been intentional and you take these steps approach to pretty much everything you do in your life. Even in relationships, are you able to use this stuff in relationships?
I use this for relationship. I use it for my family. I use it for things like finding a house when I didn't have money to find a house. And, you know, so you can use this kind of thing in a lot of different areas.
Love it. Love it, love it. I'm not going to ask you for more tips to help people move their business forward, because I think if they get intentional about their business, as you would say, right, they're going to get there. And so I think the thing we want to do is I want to challenge people to come out to the website and grab this information. Matter of fact, I'm probably going to even pop some of it on Instagram. I haven't really mentioned my Instagram. It's just e-commerce momentum, no big deep name change. But I'm going to pop some of these tips out there from Dan, because I just think they're so powerful. And if people put them in place, because Steve's putting them in place, I want to move forward faster. And this is the way to do it. And I also love your morning ritual from a health perspective. I mean, you can't start your day unhealthy with doing all this stuff. I mean, you're in a good place.
Yeah, that's certainly true, I think.
All right.
Takes time.
If somebody has a follow-up question, best way to get in touch with you?
You can get me on Facebook.
Okay, I'll put that connection in there.
That's pretty much it. I don't do the Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn too, so.
Okay. I won't put that connection. Somebody else can, in business can do, look that up. But I'll put your Facebook connection in there. Dude, I am so excited because you've just given me a whole bunch of things to do to change. And Monday's coming, and I plan on restarting, recharging, rebooting my week, Memorial Day 2017. So, man, I wish you nothing but success. Thank you so much, Dan.
Oh, you're welcome, Steve.
Man, isn't he a great guy? Again, just take his advice. I'm going to put this whole list out on my website, ecommercemomentum.com, where you can download this. And I think it's so important for you to start thinking about this. And can you apply these in your business? The answer is yes, but you got to choose to. It's got to be intentional. You know, I haven't mentioned my Instagram very much, but it's Ecommerce Momentum. You can follow me at Ecommerce Momentum. On Instagram. I post a lot of stuff. I post every single day, just different things, different things that I see, different thoughts that I have. And it's really grown, and I'm really excited about it. So ecommercemomentum.com, or follow me on Instagram, Ecommerce Momentum. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Ecommerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.